Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and today this is a program that's going to be dedicated to writers. Yes, now for those of you that have aspired to write, for those of you that do write, if you're like myself, that's something you enjoy doing, but you're probably like me, not doing it necessarily every single day or making a living at it, as my guest Priscilla Long does. And she really has a passion for writing, and she's put out a book called The Writer's Portable Mentor. It's a guide to art, craft, and the writing life. Priscilla, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be here.
Now, Priscilla, you're in the Seattle area.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And you have been a writing teacher. You have published everything from essays to poetry. You've won a National Magazine Award, and you've won a Seattle Arts Commission Award. How is it that you were able to say, this is what I want to do in my life. I want to be dedicated to writing. Not many people that I've met have ever had that kind of a passion. What was it for you?
Well, when I was a teenager, and that was a long time ago, I just decided, because I was naive, partly, although I don't think it's naive to want to be a writer, but I decided that I wanted to be a writer when I grew up, because I loved reading books, and of course, when you decide you want to be a writer when you grow up and you're 16, you don't know what you're getting into, but actually it's a wonderful, wonderful life. Not that you necessarily make a lot of money at it. It might not be the main thing that you do, but it's just a absolutely, I don't know what I would do if I wasn't a writer.
Now, by putting this book together, you are a writing teacher.
Yes.
Is this at the college level? Do you teach in high school? Where do you let others know what they can do?
Well, I have taught all over the place, But I teach mainly at this time. I teach at the Hugo House, which is a center for writers in Seattle. And then on Bainbridge Island, there's something called Fields End, which you may have heard of. And it's another writer's center, which puts on classes. And so I teach there. I teach privately. I have a website that you can go up to. And I also teach at writers' conferences. So this summer I'll be at the Taos Summer Writers Conference. And I used to teach at I teach adult writers at all levels.
Oh, so you're primarily working with adults, not children or youngsters.
Yes. Yeah, I was a kindergarten teacher many years ago, but I wasn't teaching them writing. I was reading them stories, but I wasn't teaching them writing.
Of course. You said in your book at the beginning that you wanted this book, The Writer's Portable Mentor, to be oriented towards writers of creative nonfiction.
Yes, or actually, but not only, fiction, articles, any kind of writing, truly any kind of writing, because there's so much craft. I mean, this is the result of 15 years of work, not just writing this book, but the book originated with teaching sheets that I would present to the classes, such as writing using color, red, and writing using color, red, blue, green. Writing using color involves seeing color. And so then that becomes an observation exercise, and And we do observation exercises by opening a notebook, getting out your pen, and even setting a timer and writing what's in front of your, like as a visual artist, writing what's in front of your eyes, you know, for 10 minutes or an amount of time. And so this one involves seeing color. So that's just one of the many, many things in the book.
I feel that when it comes to writing, it's one thing to speak. It's one thing to have the capacity to think on your feet, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to putting pen to paper, a lot of people really will get to the point of just saying, oh, I'm sorry, but I've got this writer's block. It's nothing's moving, da-da-da-da-da. And I have to chuckle because I remember reading something about an author, and I don't recall his name. He was quite well known. And he said all he would start to do, and at the time he was using an old-fashioned typewriter, he would just say, Johnny came in from the barn chasing the chickens. I mean, even just typing A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and then all of a sudden his mind would get into gear.
Absolutely.
And I think of many different individuals that will use different techniques to get those mental juices flowing.
Yes.
You say people should be able to just do this exercise. And I agree. I think it's a wonderful discipline.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, there is a technique, well, which is called writing practice, or that was Natalie Goldberg's term for it, and she wrote a famous book called Writing Down the Bones. And Peter Elbow is another old writing teacher who's quite famous who called it free writing. And the technique is, you see, you don't have to write anything wonderful because writing leads to writing. So the technique is to set a timer or write down what time it is and let your hand do the writing. You know, let your hand do the talking. You just write what comes. You're not trying to write anything good because you're just trying to write. You just write, and you're not trying to write. I don't even think of it as a discipline. I think of it as a practice. You just open your notebook. And you're not trying to think of what to say. You can even write, as you just said, you can write, what shall I write? Is there anything to write about today? What can I write? Can I write about what's in front of me right now? I mean, that's one place to start. What's in front of me right now? Or there are many exercises, many of which are in this book, but like you can do a recapitulation exercise, which is an exercise which simply writes down your previous day. What happened? What was important? What was not important? What did you do? That's writing. And writing leads to writing. And that's the encouraging thing. So you need not sit in front of an empty screen or empty sheet of paper or empty notebook. Simply write. And writer's block is unknown to the writers I work with, so I'm out in territory I know very little about because I think that's probably I need to write something good. And I think there's an interesting piece of information about some great writers and great creators of all kinds, painters and so on, which is that the great writers, if you want to call it that, the virtuoso writers, the great painters, I mean the Picassos, actually not only do they create more great works, masterworks, than others, they also create more duds.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
good
very
point.
Interesting. And that is because they simply work, and the work leads to the work. The work leads to the next step. There was a time in my life where I think I thought, I have nothing to say. But actually, you write to find out what you do have to say.
Mm-hmm.
And so the other technique is to many people think that it's important to, you know, have 3 hours or 5 hours in order to do your writing, or if you were to do your writing, you would have this amount of time. And what we say is you need 15 minutes. If you can write for 15 minutes a day, then you're a writer. then you're off in the right direction. And in fact, I've been writing for, well, 40 years or something. I don't know if I want to actually count up the number of years. And I've written for 15 minutes a day for, and that doesn't mean you write only for 15. Some days you write longer. But on the day you don't have time to write, you still write for 15 minutes. And that makes you a writer. It keeps you in touch with your interior life. It keeps you in touch with your material, with whatever you're working on, whether it's a short story, whether it's a book review, or whether it's an article for a newspaper, whatever it is, it keeps you in touch with it. Or novel, it keeps you in touch with your material and with yourself. That makes you a writer.
There is a statement that you make that it's important to put pen to paper, not to use a computer. And I recall a survey that was done, I believe it was last year, where a teacher didn't feel that her students should write at all, that it was a waste of their time, they would be using computers. And I thought, this is ridiculous. This is something that works with the brain. I couldn't believe that a teacher would even make that remark. She said, we shouldn't do this at all. And I just said, no, this is so wrong, because there is that creative zone that you get into when you are writing sometimes, but there is a connection with the brain that actually expands. It's just phenomenal as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, yeah, with the hand, between the hand and the brain. The body is connected to the pen, is connected to the paper. Now, we are on computers a lot. I mean, you type what you've written in the notebook.
Sure.
But writing in the notebook is pretty essential. Now, I have to say there are some people who don't want to do that, and that's okay, too. Because some people are just so tied to their computer that typing is the same almost. But I will say that the wonderful thing about, one of the many wonderful things about a notebook is a notebook cannot give you your email.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot look up anything on the internet in your notebook. And this is becoming a problem. Not that it's not wonderful and we use email and we use the internet and it's a wonderful thing, but if you're composing on the computer, the constant temptation is to stop and look up something, and this is really becoming a problem for people. Ding, your email comes in. Ding, you're writing something and you need to know a fact, so you quit there and look that up, and then you click on another link, and that brings you somewhere else. And so I just suggest, and in my classes you must write in a notebook. No laptops in the class. Now, after the class, you go and type up certain parts of what you've written. But another angle and way of looking at it is this, that say you're writing a short story. And so you have an idea. Now, if you open your screen on your computer and you just start typing, what you're doing is you're typing your short story. You're trying to write the story from the top to the bottom, which is more or less not the best way to do it. What you can do in the notebook is explore your story, is do discovery writing. Who are you? You know, you ask your character. What do you most want? This is, you're asking your character, and then you answer in your own handwriting. Your character answers. You can write from the point of view of the antagonist. So you have a character who's a protagonist, who's the one that the story is about. It's that person's story. Well, then you have the barriers. You have the people who oppose what is desired, and that's the core of a short story, or many short stories. And so, but who is this antagonist? And so in your writer's notebook, you ask antagonist. You know, Jamie, who are you? What do you want? And that those types of exercises, you actually don't want them in your story.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are many kinds of things that you can do in the notebook. So I definitely encourage it.
You like to work with language. You have a statement in your book, "Poets collect words the way some numismatists collect coins. They
yes.
work sounds constantly and consciously." Whenever
yes.
you are reading a poem or you are speaking in public, someone that has had any experience realizes that when they put an emphasis on a word in a particular way, it will have one meaning to the audience. If they shift the emphasis on another word, it'll change the meaning. The words are just so phenomenal. And I really liked what you said, collecting words. You say the best magazine writers play words as if they were notes, just like the poets do.
Yes.
And the clay you work is language. I mean, this is throughout your book, and it is so, it's so colorful to read and so informative at the same time. I really enjoyed what you have here. For you to develop what you describe as musicality with words, how does that just come with practice? I mean, is it something where you need to become the adventurer with words?
Yes. I think it does come with practice, but the first step in moving in that direction is to read. Now I grew up loving poetry. Of course, that was a great. Of course, I grew up on a dairy farm. We had mm-hmm. no television. We had we did have the radio, but we had. Of course, that was before the internet. But we had books, and we had we read Robert Frost and other poets, and we also read the Bible. We were religious, and so that helps tremendously. But then also there's an awareness that you come to that if you're kind of passive and don't actively collect lists of what we do is collect lists of words that have to do with this, whatever you're writing about. And if you are kind of passive, unconsciously what you're doing is you're absorbing the language of, say, television. You're not necessarily being original. You're absorbing, we're always absorbing the words in the world around us without being conscious of it. So if you take a writer, I don't know if you've heard of Annie Proulx, but she writes this wonderful Wyoming stories, and she uses her language is tremendously rich, or Cormac McCarthy is another, or Susan Sontag is another. There are many. They actually go out and collect words. The poet Mary Oliver actually goes out with a notebook in her pocket, and she's writing down words. And so those writers, the reason their language is so rich is that they're collecting words. Now, they're starting perhaps with naming things. So if you go outside your house or your apartment and look at all the plants, how many of them can you name? And so naming, if you walk down a street, in a city street, and you're looking at different buildings, can you name the types of roofs, the types of windows,
mm-hmm.
the types of doorways, or, you know, can you name all the different kinds of cars? I can't because I don't really write about cars, but whatever you're writing about. I mean, you can't learn the name of everything, but if you're writing about even, let's think about it this way. Every childhood, and here's how I came into this idea, actually. Every childhood has a lexicon, meaning a certain word list. So if you were born in the 1980s, or say you were born in 1980, and so you were 10 years old in 1990, that decade of your childhood had certain kinds of toys. There were certain kinds of words in vogue. There were certain kinds of drinks, you know, drinks, Cokes, vanilla.
Mm-hmm.
No, there were certain kinds of foods, and so it's place, it's time, And there were those words are totally unique to that time and place. Many of them, not all of them, but many of them. And when I actually discovered this kind of by accident, I was this was back in the 70s, and I was working as a printer, actually, as a press operator. I would get up at 4 a.m. every morning, and I would write until 6 o'clock, and then I would get ready and go to work. And during that, and I would write in my notebook, and I started writing about my childhood, which I had kind of put away. And this was on the dairy farm on the Eastern Shore of Maryland, and I just started making lists of words, and there were so many words that I never heard in my current life there. I just never heard. Greenbrier, stanchion, mastitis. This is a dairy farm.
Right.
And on and on. And I realized, oh, this is amazing, because these, just the list, I mean, no sentences, just the list and the expressions of the time, they hold that time and place all by themselves. And then I wrote little stories of things that had happened, and then that was actually my first, quote, fiction publication. It wasn't fiction at all. But helped me to realize, well, every person, say you're writing about your father or your mother or your grandfather or your grandmother, every person has a lexicon, has certain kinds of clothes they wear, has, you know, an occupation, a trade, has certain tools, have certain things they love, have certain foods associated, and on and on. And so you can, just by making a list, you can put that person on the page.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an amazing discovery. That's a wonder. That's very, very liberating. So you can start your writing day by just making a list of words. Say, I want to write about. You can start your writing day by saying, I want to write about, and then make a list, make things you want to write about, and then, okay, and then you can just start. Yes.
Well, there are so many interesting exercises that you have, and one that I think is extremely interesting is observing people. And you say to write a telling portrait is to observe a person closely, to recognize who that person is. It is to observe the person in his or her body as well as in his or her actions, opinions, achievements, derangements, or whatever. It is to hear the quality of voice, to remember his or her habitual expressions or startling expressions. There was something that I can remember long time ago,
mm-hmm.
where a person said, you can tell a lot about people in their body language. And I remember being in a mall and just sitting and watching people.
Yes.
And it was amazing. And I said, whoa,
yes.
They're right about what a person's posture reveals. Somebody may have an illness. Maybe they've got osteoporosis. You see all kinds of things. How do they look at you? How do they take care of themselves? Are they capable of doing it? I mean, there's so many different things, just what you've described. And when you can look at life from that awakened state,
yes.
it brings a richness into you
yes.
that I don't think anybody can ever gift you, because you have to gift it to yourself.
Yes, absolutely. And we have exercises that involve simply sitting in a public place, of like a cafe or, well, an airport. Many of us have to sit in airports or any place like that, and kind of discreetly writing, simply writing about one of the exercises is called gesture, which is the body language exercise, and it is a remarkable exercise. I am amazed every time I do it. And people say, well, don't people resent you, like, looking at them and writing about them? But actually, they don't notice.
That's right. They're not aware that you're observing.
Absolutely not. But the exercise has to do with watch a person's hands and watch their feet. And then what the exercise involves, writing continuously And you can get very good at, if they look over looking away, I mean, you get so good at that, that they never realize that you're writing about them. And actually, that exercise is taken from the visual arts. I mean, that's what visual artists do. They sit and they draw, and this is what you're doing. But with a body language exercise, it is just amazing. And so you're observing, first, the first thing you do, simply observe how far apart are two, let's say you're observing two people in a cafe, how far apart are they? What are their hands doing? Are they leaning back or leaning forward? And you do an exercise which is purely not drawing conclusions yet, but just writing their body language. And then you speculate. Of course, you don't know. You don't know whether you're right or not because you're not going up to them and asking them, well, okay, who has more power here? But that's one thing that's very revealing. And so then you try to see if you can draw conclusions, like who has more power here? Or what's the level of intimacy here? Or is this, you know, sometimes you'll be watching a job interview and you can, it's so obvious who's being interviewed for the job and who is hiring. It's so obvious. And you look at, as you're doing the observation part, you look at what a person's eyes are doing. Are they looking at each other or are they looking away? And that is so significant. And so, and you can, walking down the street, I mean, you can tell, I think you can tell, is this person a happy person? Or is this person really depressed or really, you know, confused or it's just looking at most people. Many of us go around and never look at another person.
Very true.
So as a writer, it's not that writers are more special or more perceptive, but the writing process it involves training yourself to look. And so when we read wonderful writing, part of it is that we're reading perceptive writing. And that just doesn't happen. It's a training. Just as a visual artist sits and draws and can draw, you know, a wonderful figure or a wonderful still life. And many even abstract painters actually still draw, even though their end works are abstract. So it's not that you are you have some special insight. I mean, maybe you do or maybe you don't. But the point is, you are training yourself to observe, and you are writing, and that brings us to insight. And how do you get more insight into your writing? Because part of it is and so part of it is observing and training yourself to observe, and then part of it is simply opening yourself and. And this is, again, a writing practice. It's how can I bring more insight into this, whatever? And just then you're writing. And it's just remarkable how, in fact, you can bring more insight. Like, can I bring 5% more insight into this? If you're writing a story or a piece, or even if you're journaling and you want insight into a situation in your personal life, your family, or whatever, writing is a great tool.
I agree. I think it's a phenomenal therapy aspect. I think that there's just so much to it, and there is that personal awareness that goes within from within the self through your fingertips into form on a piece of paper that I think is awesome. Now, Priscilla, I know we're out of time here, and you have a wonderful website, and it's your name, Priscilla Long. That's P-R-I-S-C-I-L-L-A, Long, L-O-N-G.com. And I just so appreciate your having put this book together because I have always enjoyed writing. I know many of my listeners do. A lot of them journal. And I think that your material gives a different perspective that perhaps they wouldn't otherwise have. Now, on your website, I know they're going to find out about your classes and other things. And again, I want to thank you for being my guest. Go to PriscillaLong.com and you'll find anything and everything you need to know. This book, The Writer's Portable Mentor, A Guide to Art, Craft, and the Writing Life, is absolutely a joy to read. And then just to be able to do the exercises, it would incorporate something entirely new into your life. So if you love writing and you'd like to learn more, The Writer's Portable Mentor is a book to have in your library. It'll become a very good friend. Priscilla, thank you again for being
thank
my guest today.
Thank you so much. Thank you for inviting me.
It's been a joy. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event,
Hi.
Call Delphi International.
Hi, Priscilla. I've only got a moment before I have to go back on air.
5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open. 888-815-9756 is our worldwide toll-free telephone number. And if you'd like to chat with me, hey, I'm here. So just give me a buzz, 888-815-9756. Now, tomorrow, we are going to be talking about A Guide for Midlife, Mackenzie McGee. Now, that title is really sort of misleading, because this book is absolutely amazing. One, it's filled with extraordinarily gorgeous artwork, but two, there are parables that are in it and also some astrology and so many other points of information. It really is a fascinating read. So we're going to be talking with Mackenzie McGee tomorrow. And if you want to find out more about the guests that are coming up, just tap the show information button right where you are, and you'll find out about the other guests that are going to be coming up. And again, you can give me a buzz at 888-815-9756. Now, in July 26th, I'm going to be doing a special class in the Lakewood, Tacoma area. On my newsletter, or within my newsletter, you will find the information about location, etc. And as I get closer to that date, I'll be giving you a lot more information, but I did want to let you know about that, and there are some other appearances that are going to be coming up. I don't know how my schedule ends up getting so busy, but woohoo, it just keeps getting busier and busier. I often joke with people, I say, I'm as busy as a one-armed paper hanger going up backwards up on a ladder, right? Yep, that's how much is going on. It's amazing. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. Well, one of the things I wanted to share with you today is how people are really thinking differently. They are thinking differently when they're hit with tragedies, and when I'm talking about this, this is about a Kansas farm town. And they have ended up, after a tremendous, tremendous tragedy to the town, they have done something environmentally that is absolutely awesome. It's a phenomenal example of what I feel is the true American spirit of taking what could have been just total devastation and just saying, well, that's it, we're stuck, we're sunk, we can't do anything, and walking away, to taking an attitude of how can we take this mess and this disaster and bring something good out of it. And believe me, these people in the city of Kansas have done exactly that. Now, the community is Greensburg, Kansas. Now, what happened was on the evening of May 4th in 2007, a tornado hit that town that was just absolutely unbelievable. The twister was 1.7 miles across. It was a little wider than the actual community itself. And it just came through everything. The cornfields, the wheat fields, the alarms were going off. 205 mile an hour winds. I can't even imagine that. But on film, trucks are being tossed around as if they're Kleenex. It's just absolutely amazing. And I've got photos in front of me. Of course, we all know what's gone on in Joplin. We know so many parts of the United States that have been hit in 2011. Now, this is back in 2007. They have the before pictures, and then they have some after pictures. This is what they have done. They have built eco-friendly buildings. They have more eco-friendly buildings per capita than anywhere in the country. And there's an organization called the Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. Its abbreviation is LEED, L-E-E-D. Now, this organization rates buildings on energy-saving construction, efficient and effective wise water use, efficient and effective lighting and heating. This is what they did because their whole town was absolutely leveled. It was just totally destroyed. They rebuilt their city hall. They used 50,000 recycled bricks from the power plant that was totally destroyed. And the city hall uses geothermal heating and cooling plus solar panels and natural light. Their Kiowa County School uses geothermal and wind energy. And they built it with the reclaimed lumber that occurred from Hurricane Katrina and the Kansas barns that went down because of that. The Kiowa County Memorial Hospital used LED lighting. They have energy-saving windows, high-efficiency heating recovering system. It runs on 100% renewable energy 100% of the time. They also have harnessed the wind. Across the Great Plains, which are known for their windstorms, I remember reading stories about the women that had to live on the plains and how many of them thought they were going to go insane because of the incessant winds that were always blowing. Well, in today's world, what do they use? 300-foot wind turbines. That's right. They're out in the middle of wheat fields and corn fields, and they have got 100-foot blades that spin, providing energy. What happened? Why did this evolve? It's because the people in the community said, let's do it better. We have just absolutely lost everything. We've got a lot to gain and really nothing more to lose. So let's go for it. And they did. Do you know there is a mayor there? His home was built in such a way it can withstand winds of up to 205 miles an hour. People have put in low flush toilets. They have just done so much. And they say, you know what? We all look at this as a gift. The tornado, for all of the anguish it caused us. She said, as individuals, as members of this community, we have decided we're all going to pull together. And they did. They absolutely did. All of them said, we can make it. Let's make it better. And that's what they've done in Greensburg, Kansas. And this is something that I feel is going to be happening in many other places. Sometimes we have to go through a real cleaning up in our lives. It can be regarding relationships. It could be a storm like we've seen in Joplin and throughout, you know, so many areas of the country that have been hit so hard. Flooding, just disastrous stuff. But it gives us an opportunity, if we're willing to look at it as something that, well, okay, this is what it is. This is the reality. How are we going to handle it? And get out of our pity pots and look at what is going to work for the best. Sometimes it means moving on to something brand new, a new place, a new something. Other times it means being innovative and creative right where you are. And that's what these wonderful people have been able to do in their own community. And it has made a difference, not just for them, but it's also giving an example to the rest of us that regardless of what happens, that's what we as human beings have the capacity of working with. We are resilient. We can make lemonade out of lemons. And speaking of that, there are some comments that I came across, people that had observed Oprah. And Oprah Winfrey now has her own television network, and she's just on to new and better things. And this is a woman that will never have to worry about money as long as she lives. She's got so much. She's worth $2.7 billion. However, she gives such inspiration to so many people. Why? Because she is a demonstration of things that do work. One of the things that assisted Oprah through the years was having a real good team of people around her and having those people that she could rely on. They worked together. It just wasn't Oprah. Yes, she was the personality, but it literally took dozens of people behind the cameras, designing things, booking people, doing all kinds of stuff that made her show work. She was the core of it, but everything around her had to be operated efficiently and well. She also was someone that really believed in giving back to life in a way that she felt had value. And anything from the school that she invested in, it was an academy for girls in South Africa and other things, she said she felt it was important to be able to touch other people's lives. Volunteering, we can do things. We don't have to be a billionaire like Oprah Winfrey is. We all can contribute to life in our own special way, however you want to do it. My guest today is a writer. She is someone that has contributed through the written word. You may be able to do it with children, or you might be able to do it with gardening. You might be able to do it in so many different ways. Don't demean yourself. Do what you love to do. Also, something that happens, you learn from mistakes. Oprah went through ups and downs. She's not had a perfect life, regardless of what some people might want to say. She's had a lot of bump and grinds in her life experience, and she's learned from them. And she's not afraid to be who she is. She's just said, here I am. Warts and all, this is the way it is. And people love her for it. Also, she does not hesitate to thank people, to show her appreciation for what they bring into her space. And one of the things that she says, which I believe in very strongly, is find your passion. Find what it is that creates music in your soul, that creates a joyfulness in your life. What is it that you do that, wow, man, it just makes your day? Again, the guest I had on today, it's writing. It's teaching for her. It's being able to see other people grow and blossom. For someone else, it might be designing candy flowers to put on a birthday cake. You just never know. It might be designing a new space program to take us into the worlds we've never known before. Whatever it is, remember, you as an individual are very, very significant. What is insignificant in your life is something you need to pay attention to, and if it's not worth your time, let it go. Remember, you've been given this opportunity to live, and it is really your job to be the best you possibly can be. and enjoy the journey while you're learning about yourself. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't forget, you can give me a call at 888-815-9756. We're going to be right back.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Okay, let me continue with our astrological summer horoscopes. Yes. Okay, we've done Aries, Gemini, Libra, Scorpio, and Sagittarius. And I haven't done Sagittarius. I'm sorry. So let me give you a couple today. We're going to do Sagittarius and I think Cancer. All right, so with Sagittarius, what's going to be happening this summer? Well, guess what? If you're having any friction with some special people in your life, you're going to be able to iron those things out. And by the way, in relationships, it seems like there's a whole new level that you're coming into relative to communication and interaction. So for those of you under the sign of Sagittarius, if you're feeling a little frustrated, hey, give it time. You're going to work it through, and you're going to find yourself feeling a lot better about what's going on. Now, when it comes to money, well, you're going to have to pay attention to details. You must be willing to put out that extra effort, because that extra effort and the willingness to be the best you can be in whatever you do, do it for the sake of your own satisfaction, not to try to please somebody else. You're going to be recognized, and you may find yourself having some new job opportunities that will enable you to step up if that's what you want to do, or maybe even get a raise. When it comes to travel, well, I think you're going to really want to get out on the road. Now, I know gas prices are a wee bit high, but I think being able to go to some places where they're just a lot of fun, but to sightsee is something that you would really, really enjoy. So I think July through August, well, you're going to really have a good time with that. And then let's go to the sign of Cancer. For those of you under that sign, you're going to find that you're going to have a chance to have a mini getaway. That also may enable you to put on a special event. Maybe you'd like to have a wing-ding of a party. Well, this is the year for you to do it. If you want to collect people together and wine them and dine them and entertain them or have a big potluck, whatever the medium is, you're going to have a wonderful, wonderful time. Remember, you're a very social person. You're a person that likes to be around others, and this is something that really makes a difference And when it comes to love in your life, just be who you are. You're going to attract just about whatever you want in your life because of the generosity of your spirit. When it comes to money, well, you've got to really work through some challenges that have been in your environment, and you need to make it okay that you might have to wait a little bit to see the financial results that you want. However, discipline, conscientious application of saving and working with the understanding of money and how you can make money work for you, how you can leverage it, all of that is going to pay off in the long term, but you're going to have to be diligent. You may find yourself bringing in a whole new group of people into your environment, and maybe you have developed a new friendship with someone that lives in another country or another part of the country, of the U.S. I would say, great. Understand that opens a door for you to have some new experiences with travel, cultural environments, and be able to bring yourself into a whole new level of understanding. So there we've got a couple of signs. We still have Leo, Virgo, Capricorn, Aquarius, and Pisces to go through. So those will be coming up tomorrow and perhaps some of next week. So just be patient. I'll get to those as well. I wanted to share with you a story about a man that you may or may not be aware of. I'm sure you've heard of Goodyear Tires. Well, there's a lot of history behind that company, and it starts with a man called Charles Goodyear. Now, this was a man who was an inventor. He had obtained a number of patents. One of them was an improved water faucet. Then there was an air pump. However, in 1834, yes, we're going back to the 1800s, he became interested in rubber. Now, we don't think much about it today because we have so many products that are just there for us. We just take them for granted. But believe me, back in 1834, rubber was a big item. Why? Because it came out of the sap of a Brazilian tree, and Americans, the inventive ones, saw something here that spelled opportunity and a capacity for making good income. Rubber companies, however, in the 1800s were not doing so well. They actually were going broke. So all of this enthusiasm and hotshot idealism and vision was dying on the vine. Why? Because rubber would change its composition dependent on the temperature. It would get ooey gooey when it got too hot. And think about it, many things it could be used for wouldn't hold up dependent on, again, the temperature environment it was in. They made raincoats and life preservers that were just fine if you used them in the spring, but guess what? During the winter, the cold months, they became hard, they became very brittle, they weren't worth anything. With heat, they took on, as it was described, the qualities of masticated, very smelly chewing gum. Is that a verbal visual? Well, Charles Goodyear, being the inventor that he was, decided he was going to do something different. He turned the kitchen in his Philadelphia home into a lab. He started experimenting, cooking rubber, mixing it with other substances, treating its surface with chemicals of different types. He took his mission into debtor's prison, where, behind bars, he kept mixing and testing. Once he was released, he redoubled his efforts only to be slowed down by a lack of cash. He had chronic stomach problems, and he was in bed for days and weeks. Now, there were a lot of people that backed Goodyear through the years, but he and his family, through the whole time he was working on this, lived in poverty. He was obsessed with rubber. It reduced him to auctioning off his household furnishings, even the dishes. He crafted plates and bowls of rubber for his family's use. By the 1830s, his friends said, "You're a nutcase." But he kept working on it. You couldn't keep him down. Now, Charles Goodyear moved to Boston, and there in January of 1939, he accidentally dropped a piece of rubber compounded with sulfur on a hot wood stove. He removed the rubber from the stove, looked at it very carefully, and he got excited. Instead of melting, as rubber usually did when exposed to heat, it charred like leather and was firm and flexible. He left it out in the cold overnight, stayed the same way. He found that sulfur was, when combined with high heat, mixed in with rubber, was absolutely awesome. Well, he had some other setbacks. He ended up being in debtor's prison two more times, but he kept perfecting it. At one point, when he had a severe attack of gout, he hobbled 8 miles to Boston through snow. In 1884, he finally obtained a patent on his process, which was called vulcanization. He said, life should not be estimated exclusively by the standard of dollars and cents. A man has cause for regret only when he sows, and no one reaps. He died a multimillionaire. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. What's your dream? What's your passion? Remember Charles Goodyear. He never gave up. Talk to you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.